the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Us left or right,
we are American.
Not looking for a war, but we came to fight.
We are American.
Somebody's gotta stand up.
Stand up.
Somebody's gotta do what's right. We're rising cause we're fed up. Got our house in order and got yours inside.
Good morning, Sovereign Minds.
different head on now. Here we go. Cut the rock and roll.
That's right. This is Mark Kent, and I'm your host. And we've been your host for quite some time this morning. We were subbing in for We the People. And so we're just going to keep going on.
Yeah, we're just going to keep on this roll.
In. I'm going to give you a quote. And the quote is, government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavors to live at the expense of everyone else. That's Frederick Batiste, French economist, 1881 to 1850. And there's wisdom in those words. Now, we're streaming worldwide. And, you know, today is Sunday, April 13th, 2014. And we just had an hour. We had 2 hours. We had Terrence Moore on from Hillsdale College. And yep. The last hour was Orly Tates. The next hour is going to be Lowell Ponte. And boy, we have an exciting show today. And you can call in at 530-605-4567 or KCNR1460.com. Get on the chat room and make your thoughts or questions known.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see. I had a couple stories, and then I want to get right to it with Mr. Ponte. You know, the first story I have here is Chicago murder rate plummets with concealed carry laws. Who'd have thought? So now that legal people are carrying firearms, I guess the bad guys don't really want to take on anybody who's armed.
But we already knew that because it's shown time and time again all around the world how this happens, folks.
Yep. Here's another one, USA Today. Legislation would ban state GMO labeling measures. So let me get this straight. Washington introduced Wednesday a bill that would put the federal government in charge of overseeing the labeling of our food with genetically modified ingredients. Really? Since when is the federal government in charge of, you know, the local people labeling their food or the state's labeling? You know, it's ridiculous. And there's no big money behind that. Oh, that couldn't be possible. Yeah.
No, you there's know, nothing I mean, going on here, folks.
Yeah, the legislation known as the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act would require the Food and Drug Administration to review the safety of products before it enters into the marketplace. That the safe, you know, anytime they say it's the safe factor, it's exactly the opposite. It's the non-safe and inaccurate food labeling act.
Yeah, it's kind of like the smart meters.
Yeah.
If it says smart, it's probably not that smart.
It's kind of like military intelligence, jumbo shrimp, sort of an oxymoron.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's see. The next one would be, you know, we talked about the Harry Reid behind the BLM land grab that at the Bundy Ranch out there in Nevada a little bit. We already hit on that one. And then the last one before we get to our guest here is the West slow motion collapse. This is written by Jeff Nielsen. And, you know, it says many analysts outside the mainstream herd have been making dire predictions about the collapse of the economy of the Western Bloc for the past several years, him included. These predictions have not come to pass. Does this mean that the predictions are wrong or at best woefully premature in our thinking? The answer is simply no. The thing is collapsing. It's collapsing in slow motion. But at the same time, if you go out there and look at any real stats, I'm looking at the, you know, civil labor participation rate from the U.S. Department of Labor Bureau statistics, you know, the participation rate is just, you know, tanking all the way down and straight down. The St. Louis suggested monetary base from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis is going straight up. So that means that all this money printing is getting, you know, out there into circulation. And
that means the price of everything's going up and your dollar's going down in value.
So I think what we're going to see is what Maloney predicted is a big deflation before the hyperinflation. So nothing's changed out there. And let's see if we can get Mr. Ponte on the line with this. And let's talk about some of these economic issues and get his point of view. Are you there, Lowell?
I sure am. Linda, Mark, great to be with you. Anybody who opens an hour of a show by quoting Friedrich Bastiat, You guys are wonderful. Gee. I mean, Friedrich Bastiat, remember, not only said government is the mechanism by which everybody, the illusion by which everybody tries to live at the expense of everybody else, he said we need to remember that government lives at the expense of all of us.
Yep.
How appropriate that is to remember as we're only days away from April 15th.
And yet, yes, well, we know that
Freedom
one.
Day. Tax Freedom Day will not come till 111 days into this year.
So it is about June or someplace.
More important than that, Americans for Tax Reform reminds us there are other forms of taxation, not least of which is regulation. And they have added into a thing called Cost of Government Day, which will not come until July 13th.
Wow.
You'll be working more than half this year for government. My co-author of several books and I, Craig Smith, have put together yet another kind of day that adds in inflation, which is a deliberate government policy that is a de facto tax.
Yep.
That picks the money out of your pocket. That would take us well into August.
Wow. And no, so we're not even counting fishing license or anything else either.
No, I mean the challenge, well, I mean, we can count the mandate now of requiring you to buy insurance. That is a regulation. This is what Ted Kennedy was so fond of. If he couldn't get a law passed taxing you to do something, he would just have the government order you to pay for it.
Wow.
And that would be a mandate. And he did that with thing after thing after thing. So we now live in a country where only 101 million Americans still have full-time jobs. That's the lowest proportion of the population working since Jimmy Carter. But we now have 108 million people on one or another form of means-tested welfare. We have 49.2% of all households in the U.S. where somebody living there gets a government check. So how long will it be until our elections are just bidding wars? Who will offer the most free money to the most people?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the potential future that we are fighting against with books like our recent The Great Withdrawal. But what would you guys like to talk about today?
Well, I think you're on a roll there, Lowell, because, I mean, you know, we're talking about the same thing. The real deal is I think we're in for a monetary collapse because you can't keep taking from the haves or the workers and, you know, give to the moochers and the looters and keep that going at some point. You know, people are leaving California. They're leaving the country. We are in dire straits economically, and then the Fed's printing money like there's nobody's business, you know, with QE, QE1, QE2, QE3, you know, interest rates easing. I mean, and I think what this whole pullback with the printing is an oxymoron as well. They're going to have to keep printing just to stay afloat. We're in dire straits. What do you think?
Well, they'll have to find a way to conjure money, and they're doing that by all kinds of other financial tricks that are coming into effect. So, yes, they will have to keep conjuring money out of thin air because there just isn't enough productivity left in the country to cover things otherwise. By the way, I mentioned regulations as a cost. There was a study out in the Journal of Economic Growth in January 2013 that puts it starkly this way. Suppose there had been no government regulations added just since 1949. I mean, just after the end of World War II. Today, average income, household income in the United States is $53,000. If those government regulations had not been added in the last 60 years, the average household income in America today would be $330,000.
Wow.
America's gross domestic product today is $15.1 trillion. It would instead, without those regulations, be $53.9 trillion.
And then we wonder why we're all broke.
There would be no unemployment. There would be no concern about America not having the money to pay for things. We would still be a phenomenally rich, prosperous, successful country, and the regulations have just choked us to death.
I totally agree. I mean, you know, the real deal is that if we don't get rid of the Fed and the income tax, go back to the constitutional precepts of money, of actual, you know, money being backed, but, you know, not just being backed, but actual money and getting rid of the income tax, you know, go back to apportionment among the states like the original Constitution in gold and silver. I mean, that's, we're losing our buying power. We've lost, since 1913, 98% of the value of the dollar on top of all these other regulations. It's just insane, isn't it?
Exactly right. And what people forget is that when Woodrow Wilson came in, he immediately implemented two things that Karl Marx had called for in the Communist Manifesto in 1848. He created a progressive income tax.
Yep.
which Marx said was one of the 10 best ways to destroy capitalism. And he created a central bank, the essence of which was to seize ultimately all control over finance, banking, and so on in the country.
But we're on the same page.
We'd operated with small regional or independent banks.
Yep.
And we had done just fine. We had a tremendously prosperous country. We did have occasional crashes because we were practicing an insane thing that came from England called fractional reserve banking, meaning that the bank takes your money and then lends it out to somebody else while pretending that it can give you back your money at a moment's notice. So it's a huge Ponzi scheme.
Absolutely. Listen, we got to go to a break, Lowell. Let's come back with the Ponzi scheme and keep talking because, you know, we don't. Nobody gets this on mainstream. It gets hushed up. Anybody talks about it. So we just keep hammering on it. But let's go to a break here. We'll be right back.
If you want to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. This is KCNR 1460, Community Radio for the North State.
Song. I like that.
That's going back a little
That's
ways
going
there.
Back, going back to the end of the day. Listen, we get a little ahead of ourselves here, Lowell, and I wanted to kind of introduce you a little better than just, hey, you're on the air, guy. And, you know, you're one of the most respected, hosts of on the air radio programs. You've done Low Ponte Live. You've been on, on the TV, David Letterman, I believe.
Used to write for Reader Digest.
Just all kinds of stuff. You've been a foreign correspondent in 32 countries so you've been around the block a couple of times here, and so.
Oh, I have, and by the way, you probably noticed the news this morning is they are still reporting hearing pings from the U.S. Constitution, even though it was crashed by the progressives into the sea 100 years ago. There's still evidence it's alive down there.
Hey, that's a good filler, man. In the last 100 years, we've been getting pings.
Yep, we've been getting
pings. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, there was just a poll out from Breitbart, for example, this morning. 60% of Californians believe they are overtaxed. Well, duh.
Did the ping get you or what? Are you hearing me now?
I'm a fellow Californian, of course. I'm just from Redlands instead of Redding. So.
Yeah. Well, we know where that's at. We actually used to live in the San Bernardino Mountains up there at Running Springs with the school there until second grade. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Small world. Also, we wanted to mention you got a couple books out, too. You have Crushing the Dollar and Inflation Deception. That you've written that people probably...
We have that. We also have The Great Debasement, and our current book is The Great Withdrawal, and the book that will be out this summer is called Don't Bank on It, explaining the 19 ways in which basically mean you're an idiot to have a bank account.
So you think there might be...
I still remember... There in Redlands, when I was 5, my mother took me down to the Bank of America, and I got my first little passbook. And I had an account with $5 in it, and it was so safe, and it earned real interest of 3% or 5% or something. How much interest do they pay you today? They pay you nothing.
You probably have to pay them to keep the account up. So.
That is actually what the European banks are now talking about.
Absolutely.
They call it negative interest rate.
Yep.
Maybe you will have to pay them to have a... But the point is, it used to be that having a bank account was a low risk, high reward exercise that encouraged savings. What is it today? It is an ultra high risk exercise for reasons we can discuss if you're interested.
Sure.
But they pay you nothing. And therefore, why take a risk with your money to be paid nothing?
Yeah, because you know under the current Dodd-Frank rules, you are an unsecured creditor, and they can actually seize your bank account. You don't own your money anymore as soon as you put it in the account. And, you know, they're talking about bail-ins Cyprus style. What do you think about that?
Oh, well, that's what we have written about at great length. In fact, we have a whole chapter on that in the current book, which is The Great Withdrawal. By the way, we'd be happy to give all of your listeners a copy of that book post-paid.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, nice.
50-page, $20 at the bookstore book. But mercifully, my co-author doesn't need the money from selling books. He's a very successful businessman. He and I are just trying to save the world for our grandchildren, bring back the republic, much as you guys are fighting to do, go back to a world of big people and small government and individual freedom and honest money. You take away any of those things, of course, and the country will spiral down. And one of the things they've done is take away the honest money.
Boy, isn't that
so
the truth.
So when money is something, I mean, remember, when they created the Federal Reserve in 1913, the very opening lines of its enabling legislation were that its purpose was to furnish an elastic currency, quote unquote, to replace that nasty old solid gold stuff that the politicians were not free to print all they wanted of. And they have since gone so crazy printing money. I mean, remember what P.J. O'Rourke said. Well, P.J. O'Rourke said many wonderful things. P.J. O'Rourke said that liberalism is just communism sold by the drink, which is so true. But he also said that, you know, giving power like this to politicians is like giving whiskey and car keys to teenage boys. You know, it will not end well. And that's what's happened. We have spendaholic politicians of both parties who just have gone nuts, conjuring money out of thin air to give people. As a result, we now have this huge schism. As we discussed, 101 million people are all the ones still with full-time jobs, 108 million on welfare. And I don't mean Social Security. I mean means-tested welfare programs.
Wow.
You know, add Social Security, that's a whole other kettle of fish. And the way they do bookkeeping nowadays, Social Security adds to the total bill, which is to say the unfunded liability of the government, another $5 trillion every year. But do they count that in the budget as they bring in their, what, $2.77 trillion worth of taxes? That's right. Social Security alone is increasing our debt by about twice as much as we're bringing in tax revenue.
Yep. And it's going to get worse.
One government program.
And it's going to get worse as the... Absolutely, because the baby boomers are starting to retire, pulling their money out of the stock market because they have to, and going on Social Security. You know, it's just crazy. And, you know, I wanted to go back to what you said about the you know, counterfeiting is counterfeiting under any other definition other than if you're the Federal Reserve. But what it does is it so distorts the market and it creates a condition where there's no price discovery. And, you know, I mean, can you comment on that as well?
Wow, you guys are doing such a sophisticated show. This is amazing. Yeah, yes, for a free market to work, there have to be honest market signals. You have to know what real demand and real supply and so on are. And that's determined by how people buy and sell. But if you inject vast amounts of money, the way I put it is there are some things that even the government can't do. For example, they cannot wave a magic wand and repeal the law of gravity. Personally, I wish they could. I wouldn't have to diet as much. But they can't. And therefore, You look at other laws in the universe. The law I focus on here that they also can't repeal is the law of supply and demand, which is just as real in the human mind as the law of gravity. Now, what that means is if the government suddenly dumps twice as many paper dollars in everybody's pocket by just running them off the printing press, what does that do when you go to the supermarket? Well, that just means very soon everything that used to cost a dollar will cost $2. You're not increasing the supply of goods for people to buy. All you're doing is increasing the number of dollars. And so every dollar loses value. And add on top of that, Our government is now practicing a systematic policy, so is the Fed, known formally to economists. Believe it or not, this is a formal economic term, financial repression. In financial repression, the Fed deliberately holds the rate of interest your bank is paying you below the rate of inflation. And that means that every day you have a bank account, you are losing money. You are losing purchasing power because the inflation is eating up the value of your money in your bank account faster than whatever interest you might be paid is replenishing it.
I think that's one of the big reasons that people need to understand precious metals and hard assets and get their money out of the banks and into those things, because they hold their value in a relative amount, in a way that's relative to the amount of currency that's being printed into circulation. And,
you know, and what you have to remember about the founders of this country or the framers of the Constitution, they knew perfectly well the danger of paper money.
Yep.
I mean, they had to live with it during the Revolution in that currency they put out called the Continental, which as we've documented in these books, lost phenomenal amounts of value because all they could do is print it. I mean, the British had cut them off from the British pound, and they didn't have enough gold at that time to go over to their own gold currency.
Yeah, that's the term, worthless as a continental. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. And therefore, when they wrote the Constitution, they specified hard money as the basis, which is to say gold and silver, as the basis of value. And if you printed money, it basically had to be linked to, anchored in, the value of hard money, which, of course, from the beginning made some politicians annoyed. They wanted, as in Europe, just to be able to print the stuff and play games with it.
Yeah,
and
because
buy votes with it, as they do today.
Well, that's the deal.
But
the
Thomas Jefferson said something very interesting. He said that basically paper is so unreal, it is not money. Paper is the ghost of money, said Jefferson.
Yep.
And we have been haunted by that ghost ever since.
Yeah, paper is poverty.
Paper is poverty.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So we got to go to a break, but I want to come back because I've taken a little bit of umbrage with what you have to say. I don't think that the United States is subject to any of these physics or economic principles. I think that we can just go on and do this forever, and there's not going to be any repercussions.
So we can tax and spend and borrow our way to prosperity.
And print our way out of it with counterfeiting.
Well, see, that's what John Maynard Keynes believed. And this is where we get into the amusement of Keynes, who also believed that savings was a bad thing.
Yep. Listen, we got to go to a
paradox of thrift, as he called it.
We got to go to a break, Lo. We'll come back with, and let's talk about the Keynesian paradox a little bit.
This is KCNR 1460, home of the Free Fire Media.
No more!
Bad.
couple
yeah, times. Yeah, bad to the bone, man. Get it on there, George. That's George Thorogood. Good stuff, you know?
In more ways than one. Watch out here.
Hey, we're talking to Lo Ponte, and before I go any farther, I'm getting all kinds of people asking me, how do we get the book? How do we get the book? I was going to let them languish in their lack of information for a bit of a time, but they're starting, the natives are starting to get restless. They're calling in, so maybe you can enlighten us there, Lowell, and let us know, how do they get your book?
Oh, sure. The book, just call a toll-free number, and remember, we'll pay for the postage. This book will not cost you a penny. It's also a survival guide that could save your, you know, life savings and your future, too. But by all means, check it out. And then the toll-free number to get the book, 800-630-1494. That's 1-800-630-1494.
And what's the name of the
book? Like to say, it's a little bit like Columbus sailing the ocean blue in 1492, but not quite. It's 1-800-630-1494. And you'll get a phone device. Just leave your name and number there. We will get back to you. We'll find out if you'd rather have a Kindle version of the book or something for your computer. By the way, most people don't realize you don't need to buy a Kindle device in order to read Kindle books.
Interesting.
From Amazon. You can just put a Kindle app for free on your computer
right.
and read books
yeah.
directly on your
yeah,
computer.
That's
anyway,
right. Yeah, that's right.
800-630-1494 is the number. And
what's the name of the book again, Lo? Just so
this book that we're giving away at the moment is The Great Withdrawal, How the Progressives' 100-Year Debasement of America and the Dollar Ends. And this way, by the way, we'll be able to contact you as the next six books, pardon me, the next eight books in our series of 12 come
nice.
Out.
Nice.
The next one will be this summer, as I said. It will be called Don't Bank on It. And it will go into the horror of what happened in Cyprus.
Yeah.
It goes into the magic that you described so accurately, where when you put your money in a bank account today, you foolishly think it's still your money. But under the current law, it isn't. It becomes the bank's money.
Yep.
It becomes an unsecured asset of the bank. And all you walk out with in that passbook is an IOU.
Yep. Absolutely.
And maybe the bank will pay off on it, and maybe they won't. In any event, because what you've given them is an unsecured asset of the bank, if the government decides to loot the bank for whatever reason, it will take all those unsecured assets as it did in Cyprus. People were horrified to find that the government could just take their bank accounts. They woke up one morning, their bank was locked, their ATM was shut down, they couldn't reach their account. Oh, except in one way. And this is what I find so amusing. One of the things the government wanted most, because Cyprus committed the horrible sin of being a tax haven that was widely used by Russian billionaires, is a vast amount of Russian money was flowing through the banks at Cyprus, and the governments had hoped to seize a lot of that money. However, the government of Cyprus delayed their action by a few days. And during those few days,
yep.
guess what? All the money in the accounts of the Russian billionaires vanished.
Yeah, all the big money got out, all
it
the big boys.
Yep. And people later discovered that while the Cyprus banks were closed down in Cyprus, the branches that they had in Moscow and London remained open.
Just coinciding.
And were allowing withdrawals. And nobody was really paying much attention to the corporate jets flying out of Cyprus. Now, why this is amusing is in recent weeks we heard President Obama say to Russia, if you go any further into Ukraine, we're going to seize Russian assets. Right? You know what happened while he was saying that?
Hmm.
Putin's agents in New York walked into the Federal Reserve Bank in New York and withdrew, in government treasuries being held for Russia there, $105.1 billion in treasuries. In other words, they took out more than a tenth of $1 trillion from the New York Federal Reserve Bank, and Obama's administration did not lift a finger to stop them. Russian corporations also took many other billions out during this period. In other words, it was just like what happened in Cyprus. And by the way, you remember that Putin and company said, well, if you seize our assets, we'll seize your assets in Russia, where Pepsi, for example, makes 7% of its worldwide revenue, where Ford and General Motors have auto factories and so on. And the Obama administration turned to them and said, how could you possibly justify that? And Putin's chief legislator on the issue just turned to the Russian news agencies and said, remember what the Europeans did in Cyprus? Our precedent for seizing assets is Cyprus. And you know, he was right.
It's so true.
We've created this perfect precedent for private property meaning nothing.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean that, and they established that here in the United States with MF Global and the Sentinel case, and the Dodd-Frank is clear in what it says about the fact that you're an unsecured creditor, and the derivatives and the secured creditors will get paid first if there is a bank failure or the government decides to seize
assets.
Remember,
those old things don't mean anything if we look back to Chrysler and GM and how Obama handled that and how the secured bondholders were just shoved out of the way so the company could be given to the United Auto Workers, who had no legal claim to anything at all.
Yeah, it completely circumvented the bankruptcy laws at that point.
Yeah, and that was overturning more than 200 years of established law in this country. And so go ahead and try to get a secured bondholder next time, kids. You're going to find it a little more difficult.
Yep.
Cities are going to find it a little more difficult, depending on what the outcome in Detroit ultimately is, too, to get people to buy municipal bonds. But this is the challenge. You can't just cheat people forever and expect them to keep cooperating with you. So we've had this surreal behavior ever since Cyprus. And by the way, those who think, well, we're protected, we have the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation behind our accounts. Boys and girls, the Bank of England and the FDIC signed a joint memo of understanding in December 2012 before Cyprus, accepting the doctrine of the bail-in that would be used in Cyprus, and that the chief financial minister and the European ministers, Mr. Dijsselbloem of Denmark, I think it is, or the Netherlands, said this will now be the template from now on for how we will handle bank problems. Before we bail anybody out, we will take all the bank's available assets, including your accounts.
And you get stuck in the bank. You'll get stuck. Isn't that great?
Yeah, so this is why I say, and why we say in the new book, why, in exchange for zero interest payments, are you putting your money in a bank? Do you understand that the Obama administration, through its new bizarre financial entity that they created, this new regulatory panel, do you realize that they also are planning to seize all of the retirement accounts the way they did in 2008 in Argentina, where people woke up in Argentina and found that all the money had been taken out of their retirement accounts, and in its place, an equal face value had been put of Argentinian government bonds. Now, that sounds terribly impressive until you realize that an Argentinian bond has a real value as opposed to a face value of about 20, 29 cents on the dollar. So basically, they stole nearly three-quarters of all the savings accounts, the retirement accounts of people in Argentina, by that one gesture.
Wow, and that's, I guess,
they're planning to do the same thing here. They just need an occasion to trigger it.
I agree. I mean, that's the hope and keep the change deal, because that's what's coming. And I've been saying this for quite some time, that these bail-ins are going to be the thing, because, it, like you say, they've already got the pattern and the template for it through Cyprus and a couple other places, I guess.
And, now, Ludwig von Mises said that in Germany after World War One, as they were going into hyperinflation, what people on the exchanges there did, and I don't speak German, but he used a German phrase that translates as, they carried out a flight into things, meaning instead of investing in paper money that the government can just run willy-nilly off the printing press.
Yep.
By the way, for people to understand, you've all heard the stories about people getting a wheelbarrow of money and running to the store because the money was losing value by the hour. There was a touching story. We've gone at great, great length into what happened in Weimar in several of our books. But there was a touching story of a man who brought in his entire life savings to a government office and said, I've worked all my life for this. What can I buy with it today? And they bit their lips. They did not want to tell him that his entire life savings could no longer buy one postage stamp.
Wow. Well, that's the Keynesian model.
See, the real horror of Weimar was not just the people, but the speculators won, and the conservative, honest, moral people who worked hard and saved got screwed by it. The real danger of Weimar is it shattered the moral base of German society and turned it over to a Weimar Republic that is, if you've seen the movie Cabaret, for example,
yep.
you understand the Weimar Republic was engaged in exactly the kind of generally immoral behavior and values that the Obama administration advocates today. It was socialism, heavily modified by, oh, let's take every depraved minority and call them good and call the Boy Scouts bad.
Well, isn't that...
That's what Weimar was doing. In other words, they paved the way for Adolf Hitler.
Isn't that the Machiavellian model that we always want to, you know, emulate? You know, debase everybody's morality and you know, so that you're not watching the government do what they do?
Well, this is a theme of a forthcoming book that we're dealing with. Don't tell anybody. but the central theme of the book... is to go beyond the Gresham's Law. You know, Gresham's Law
sure.
said that good money drives out bad. And by the way, Gresham was a financial advisor to Queen Elizabeth, who, as successor to Henry VIII and her brother and so on, the Tudor reign stole about three-quarters of the value of the money. In fact, the original term, the Great Debasement, referred to how much silver they had taken out of British money. All sovereigns have loved the idea that they can steal money from the people that way. Oh, by the way, we mentioned John Maynard Keynes. See, there's so much to talk about. We could just go on.
Yeah, let's go to a break and let's talk about Keynes. Let's come back with Keynes.
Yeah, because I have some wonderful quotes people need to hear from Keynes.
Okay, very good.
All right, this is KCNR 1460, Community Radio for the North State.
Bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so,
here with Lowell Ponte. Very interesting, very articulate conversation here. I love it. This is right up my alley.
Oh, by the way, I do want to join in something we heard during the break.
Uh-huh.
I want to applaud the efforts for the state of Jefferson.
Very
this
good.
This is April 13th. Today would be Thomas Jefferson's 271st birthday.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, and I just happen to be head of the Jefferson's Birthday Committee dedicated to making his birthday a national holiday for taxpayers.
Great.
An idea, by the way, that I've written up in articles over the years in the New York Times, in the LA Times, in Reader's Digest, and so on. In fact, I did a commemorative piece in Reader's Digest on his 250th birthday, but... Jefferson was just an incredible giant among men. Were it not for him, we would have probably gone the way of the Soviet Union.
I'll tell you, Jefferson's my favorite guy out of all of them, the money, everything. But we could talk about him for another hour, but let's go back to John Maynard Keynes.
This is the economist that the Obamaites and progressives and so on looked to, because Keynes wanted to, among other things, abolish the business cycle. He figured if we taxed people when business was good, we could then inject money as a government into the economy when things were bad and level the cycle out. Now, of course, what he doesn't understand is the business cycle is like the heartbeat of the economy. And when you level it out, you basically flatline the country.
Well, they're flatlining us, all right.
But I do have to say this about Keynes as a British economist. Unlike most economists who just live in universities and are theoretical, Keynes actually got involved as an investor himself. He made one fortune, lost it, came back and made another fortune investing in the market. So at least he proved that he had the ability to do that, which yeah. most economists, they're just basic theoretical airheads who don't understand anything. But here's what Keynes said in his 1919 book, The Economic Consequences of the Peace, speaking of World War I. Lenin is said to have declared that the best way to destroy the capitalist system was to debauch the currency, wrote Keynes. By a continuing process of inflation, governments can confiscate, secretly and unobserved, an important part of the wealth of their citizens. As the inflation proceeds and the real value of the currency fluctuates wildly from month to month, Keynes continued, all permanent relations between debtors and creditors, which form the ultimate foundation of capitalism, become so utterly disordered as to be almost meaningless, and the process of wealth-getting degenerates into a gamble and a lottery. Lenin was certainly right, Keynes concluded. There is no subtler, no surer means of overturning the existing basis of society, that is to say, capitalism, than to debauch the currency. The process engages all the hidden forces of economic law on the side of destruction and does it in a manner which not one man in a million is able to diagnose, wrote John Maynard Keynes in 1919. You notice now we have a Federal Reserve Board that actually says it aims to create what they call positive inflation. An interesting phrase when you understand that inflation is just another word for theft.
Yeah, and who's you know, everybody say inflation is good. You always hear that. 2% inflation is good. We had 2%. And good for who, you know? Not us.
Well, I mean, you understand the Fed represents above almost everything else. I mean, it is nominally a private cartel of sure. banks and so on. But what they represent is the interest of the government. And the government interest is in, I mean, now that the government has gone so deep in debt, if interest rates were not held close to zero, every percent the interest rates increase, if government had to pay it, could add up to another $1 trillion
yes.
of obligation to the government. Therefore, they cannot afford to let the interest rates drift upward.
Yeah, if the 10-year goes up to 3.5, it's over, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, unless they think they can squeeze that much money out of you or me.
Or print it.
As one major, well, as the head of the New York Fed at the time in 1946, his name was Rummel, R-U-M-L, famously said in a drunken speech to financial people in New York, he said, don't you people understand, we don't even need to tax you anymore. All we need to do is print money. The government has the printing press. The government can do anything it wants. The government cannot go broke. And, of course, he was right. I mean, we devoted a whole chapter in a recent book to modern monetary theory, which has technically supplanted Keynesianism. They use the name Keynes, but they're operating by modern monetary theory, in which the government assumes that it forever owns all money that it creates. You may have some in your pocket at the moment, but if the government wishes to claim it, it can, and does, as we'll find out on April 15th.
Well, that's the debt. I mean, they're selling the treasuries back out so that they can keep financing the debt. I mean, it's
in
the cycle of Ponzi.
Rummel himself admitted the real reason they still tax is not in order to raise revenue for the government. It is, A, to keep inflation from exploding.
Right.
So they have to keep clawing enough of the money back that it's not in circulation. You notice they've played this very exotic game of giving the banks money and then having the banks forced to lend the money to the government itself rather than to private people. So that freezes the money. And that's why we're not seeing explosive inflation. Even though, in the last 12 months, boys and girls, while the government is telling you we have 1% inflation and we need more, food prices went up 19%.
Yeah, I just heard that.
How much inflation do you need? But of course, the government doesn't count food and fuel because those are volatile factors that mustn't be counted. In other words, it's all a lie. Everything they tell you in government stats now is a lie to cover the fact that we're living in this fantasy world. We're living in this Alice in Wonderland economy that's been running on the government creating money out of nowhere. Productivity is at appallingly low levels. Unemployment is massive. It's well above, it's up to and beyond European levels.
So what do we do, Lo? I mean, we're down to the last couple of minutes. What do you think
that
we should do?
When you start by reading our book.
Reading the book will help?
Yeah, which will tell you how you can protect yourself, at least, and how we still... I mean, the good news is that the progressives are in a panic. This is why they're openly using the IRS. This is why the Attorney General can actually go before Congress, as he did this last week, and physically threaten a congressman. I mean, it's just, you better not go there, buddy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just surreal.
Yes.
But what it shows is the progressives are scared to death. They've seen the recent polls that show 60% of Americans, when asked by pollsters, does our government rule today with the consent of the governed, 60% say no.
Yeah.
Now, you read the Declaration of Independence, the only thing that gives government legitimacy is that people perceive it ruling with the consent of the governed.
Well, that was the whole thing on the prince. I mean, you wanted to extract everything and keep them down as far and get as much out of them as you possibly could, but don't push them over the edge to where they would revolt.
Well, I mean, we in the current book, The Great Withdrawal, we go into great length about all the means of mind control and manipulation that the government... Do people understand that the White House now actually has a mind control office?
No, I didn't know that.
It was implemented a summer ago. There, I mean, all based on this book, Nudge, by one of their favorite... I mean, they have brain scientists there. They have people who are using the latest brain research, mind manipulation techniques to control the populace.
Is that Cass Sunstein? Is that who that is?
That's Cass Sunstein.
Yes, with that, yeah.
And we quote some of the shocking, mind-boggling things Cass Sunstein says here. I mean, we've had Holder, we've had Sunstein and others basically say, we're going over to brainwashing. In fact, Holder has used the term brainwashing for what he intends to do to the populace here.
Wow.
Unless you are reading books like ours or listening to shows like yours, the people are easily fooled by that. By the way, again, if people would like the book, absolutely free and postpaid, 800-630-1494 is the number. That's 800-630-1494.
Yeah, get a hold of the book and find out what you can do about it out there. Prepare yourself. That's what we've been saying for a long time. We're down to a minute, Lowell, so you got 30 seconds to tell us whatever you can.
Whatever I can. Well, I hope you have a wonderful tax day. I mean, I join in those talk hosts who over the decades have said, what we need is to have election day on the day after tax day.
That's a good one.
Instead of deliberately put as far away from tax day as possible in the calendar. So that people have some connection between how much they're being robbed of. I mean, it's astonishing.
Yep, I agree.
There should be some kind of alternative maximum tax.
Well, listen, Lo, you're a great guest.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
But they're going to cut us off here. The music's going to start playing here in a second. But,
okay. Well, right. By the way, 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty. It's cost us... $21 trillion, $335,000 per family, and poverty one.
Wow.
Thanks again, Lowell. You were great, and we'll love to have you back in the future.
Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. It is force, and force like fire is a dangerous servant and a fearful master.
This is KCNR 1460, Community Radio for the North State.
Simple man.